SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough!
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Churchill Downs, Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports Zone 999. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. And after yesterday's six-minute show, I'll tell you what. Yes, that way, I guess there's been shorter when we got knocked off the air before ever getting on. No, that was a Comcast internet issue, and they actually did get back by about 11:30 or so, but at that point it was didn't make sense. So actually we worked on some other technical issues, and we're here for 3 hours, and we will have to pack 6 hours of discussion into the three. I think we'll be able to do it. We got most of what we missed yesterday today, and in fact to some degree it benefits us because Dick Powell, you know, we now have the Champions Day action from Hong Kong Saturday night, Sunday morning, and we've got those fields set. So that actually gives us the opportunity to discuss it that way. And Dick, one thing you didn't need to be on the air for, gave out Dick's play for the pick three, the late pick three yesterday, and Dick promptly hits that 60-something. I mean, it was solid, rock solid. So thanks to Dick, and we'll congratulate him when we talk to him. Steve Asmussen, as promised, will be by in about 15 minutes or so, and he'll be on. He's not going to come by. But there's a myriad of things to discuss with Steve Asmussen, most notably a congratulations on Gunrunner making the Hall of Fame. So we wanted to do that. And then, of course, there's Steve's participants in Derby and ideally in Oaks. Track Phantom, who we've been identifying as post-hype a little bit, who seems to be coming into this just fine. And if you were a fan in January, you are going to get, you know, twice or more the price that you were going to get, you know, earlier in the campaigning process. We'll also talk about Our Pretty Woman, who right now is on the outside. Ron Anderson joined us on Tuesday with Joelle, and they're excited about Our Pretty Woman, but she needs a couple of things to happen now, and we are this much closer to the draw Saturday evening between 7 and 8 o'clock. They will draw the Oaks and the Derby. They'll do the Friday and Saturday cards, normal draw in the racing office on Saturday, and they'll have a lot of times they produce an overnight. I'll ask Ben Huffman, but usually they produce an overnight without the Derby and Oaks on them, and so you can peruse those ahead of time, and then once they get the Oaks and Derby draw set. So in addition to all the topics with Steve, and of course we will absolutely get a Steve Asmussen lock of the week when we talk to him, but also the really wonderful story involving Son Keith. And it's getting all the appropriate attention that, you know, you would have expected it to get. And, you know, that involves Just Steel and Lemon Muffin. It's very cool. So we'll talk to Steve about Keith getting mounts in Derby and Oaks and what it means to him and Julie and the brothers and the whole family. What initially seemed like, okay, you know, the next generation of Asmussen jockey, and how long will that last? And, you know, before they go off into training and whatever area of the game they had. But Keith is having, you know, such tremendous now success. And you know, he is tall and lanky, but if he has stopped growing, then this riding career could continue. So Steve Asmussen in a little bit, and Dick Powell this hour as well. Sid for Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and we'll see what Sid's got. Got to start to, you know, pare down. And Sid and Francis, in their observation columns, they've been very focused on Keeneland, and they've been watching the 2-year-olds. In fact, that's something else I can bring up with Steve, right? They had that Tappet win yesterday at 4.5. How about that? When was the last time a Tappet 2-year-old won like that? In fact, I think I saw where David Fisk asked that question on Twitter. Joe Clancy will join us as well. And I've been saving the Middleburg and Butler results from Saturday on the jump set. So we'll get that in with Joe, and we'll get some of his early Derby thoughts 48 hours ahead of draw. And we had Sean last week. I certainly will slip them both in. We'll probably have them on together one day next week, and let them share their Derby selections and analysis. Tom Law will be here in person, so we'll been saving that visit for Tom. Anthony Stabile is going to visit, and Anthony has got to be just so excited for Monday to come, when he becomes the voice of Finger Lakes. And really, it's I said this, you know, when the announcement came a couple of weeks ago, it's really a real accomplishment. He did this, he practiced, he worked at it, and basically is, you know, made himself into a track announcer, something he always dreamed of doing. So I want to celebrate with Anthony a little bit later. And in hour three, we got a very busy third hour. Tom Rooney is going to visit at 11, and the NTRA launching an initiative, not just an initiative, but also a public relations campaign. And the timing of it is excellent, which I'll talk about momentarily. So we'll discuss that with Tom, notably. And on the back end, that's the beginning of Hour 3, on the back end of Hour 3, Lisa Lazarus, for about the last 15 minutes, the only opportunity really we've got, or she had too, reached out to Dr. Durenberger and Ann McGovern and everybody on the safety front. If you saw Tuesday afternoon the release of the diagnostic system that they've been, you know, talking about and developing, and this is something, you know, that really an industry-wide initiatives industry-wide when it comes to, you know, trying to utilize data sets and, you know, basically every point you can come up with to identify at-risk horses. In between Rooney and Lazarus, when using Thoroughgraph, we'll have the visit with Crafty. Jeff Franklin will be here. I picked the Roxalana, the Dirt Sprint, here opening night at Churchill, as well as the Royal Heroine, which came up nice at Santa Anita. So we got a turf route, and we've got a Dirt Sprint. Two nice juxtapositions for when using Thoroughgraph segment. And we also, I'm sure, we'll talk a little look ahead a little to Derby and Oaks. As I told you earlier this week on Monday, when they dropped, Jerry dropped the first package, which is essentially Oaks and Derby contenders and their figs. And there's already been, you know, considerable analysis going on, and everybody getting familiar with the horses. So there's, there's the busy morning. And I reference the timing of this public relations initiative. And it happens to be something that Tom hinted at and gave you a little preview of when we were together at Vegas. I reached out to Bill Finley this morning as well. And if you haven't gone to yet to TDN today, the TDN for Thursday, Bill wrote he got a preview, the opportunity to preview this New York Times latest, broadside against the sport. And, you can't get to Derby season. You can't have Derby season without the New York Times taking a swipe at the game. Bill wrote a terrific, preview/review/opinion piece, and he'll join us tomorrow, early in the show, probably around 9:15, 9:20, and because he's tied up this morning. So when you read this, you'll appreciate. I'll say, I have not seen it. But I can tell from Bill's having seen it and the way he presented it, it's another rehash of all the same, of all the gory and sensationalized elements that this crowd has been heaping toward the industry now for an extended period. They're essentially. Bill explains there's absolutely nothing new. They just keep repackaging the same, and frankly, at this point, not just tired, but also tired and worn out and already addressed with significant elements of administration of the game. You're going to keep trotting out. They're going to keep trotting out. The feds, and they're going to trot out the spates of injuries, and they're going to trot out. The constant. Examination of anything that Bob Baffert does or has ever done. They just keep. Keep. Moving the chess pieces and trying to present it as some new indictment of the game. The problem is the game has responded not just aggressively, but successfully at every juncture to any and all of the things that this kind of a investigation, FX investigates, New York Times presents, Broken Horses. I'm anxious for Bill to explain what he saw, but it the timing is good to have Tom and Lisa visit to reiterate. I mean, what's funny, internally as an industry, we all know this, and we're all part of the efforts, to keep horses out of harm's way. We're not, we're this is the proverbial, choir preach. It's externally. It's to the masses that don't really, that are easily swayed, and have no idea. So it seems to me, based on what Bill is saying about the preview that he saw, and he saw the whole thing. I don't think he just saw snippets. And this comes out tomorrow night, 10:00 on FX. They purposefully. They present they present Heise, I guess, as you know, the industry was forced to. No, the industry wasn't forced to create Heise. I mean, it's been massaged. It was massaged around for a decade. Let's stop pretending that the feds had to step in. The feds didn't step in. What are you talking about? The industry constructed the concept, and I mean needed you know federal support to you know codify it, but it's not like some you know some division of the government came in and you know and also this whole theme of the industry and the industry's not in peril. The industry is not teetering. These companies aren't putting in billions of dollars to new facilities with the game supposedly falling off a cliff. Stop with that nonsense. It's too big. It's too successful. There's too many people employed. There's too much. It's an industry. This is a going business. And it's not going anywhere. And so this phony posture, the future is imperiled. It's not imperiled. just stop. it's just idiotic. It's all done to you know sell papers and draw eyes and clicks. That's what it's about. It's gross. So, we'll. It's up to us, though. I say this all the time. We've got to. It's hand-to-hand combat. Get out there, and you know, explain. You don't have to defend, per se. Just explain. When friends and families ask, you know, what happened there? What you know? I saw a horse. Yeah. And it doesn't matter. 700 veal calves are made into scallopini on a daily basis. But we're gonna throw our hands to the sky. 300 horses, you know, a little less than a horse. We lose a horse a day. We're constantly trying to whittle that down. You got to be kidding. You got to stop. And we're not. Nobody's supposed to be. Nobody needs to be embarrassed and horrified that you're involved in this. It's amazing what's happened. Jesus. All right. You know what this topic does to me. I'll tell you one thing that was a wonderful response, and that was, of course, the PDJF telethon on Sunday. Over $430,000. So thanks to everybody, and of course the team at PDJF, Nancy LaSala, and everybody involved, all the jocks that were answering phones, and the team at FanDuel and at Fox with America's Day at the Races, everybody exhorting for contributions. There apparently were big major gifts too. FanDuel and Lane's End each put in $100,000, and then you know some very familiar names with significant contributions. The Hyder family, John Stewart, and of course John Stewart and Mike Rapoli working to raise money together. Nice to see that. Kentucky Downs with a big gift. Vince Foglia, Patricia's Hope, Bobby Flay, and nice to see, you know, we hate that Bobby is going to be less involved in the game, you know, from the ownership side. I think he's going to, you know, still he's got his top brood mares. I think he's going to continue that way. But Debbie Finley as well, and Janie Buss. How about that? Nice. Speaking of the bus, the name makes me think of another very well-known name in the game, the Brunetti family. And I missed this on, I guess, Wednesday. Was it Tuesday? absolutely heartbroken to hear that Stephen Brunetti, who's been fighting cancer for 5 years, essentially, 56, and, you know, obviously not far in the shadow of his father's passing. So thoughts out to the whole Brunetti family, his brother, of course, John Jr., and a lot of people that virtually any horseman and any set of connections that competed ever at Hialeah, you know, in the later stages, know everybody involved here. So I'm thinking about the Sackos too, Rick and Greg, and just the saddest. I guess I missed this on Monday or Tuesday, and I'll try to get some information on contributions, etc. A couple other quick notes, and then we'll get to Steve Asmussen. Got a hit, by the way, trainer's dinner. I want to talk about that later today as well. Tuesday, trainer's dinner, cocktails at 5 o'clock after races, and right on the first turn at the first turn club. You can get a big table if you want, if you got a bunch of people coming, if you're going to be in town. It's so much fun. So we will keep reminding you about that as we get closer, as well as the second stride on Monday, which I'm going to be part of. Doug Nachman, and we've got Andy Biancone, and we've got Byron King. Jenny Reese, I'm sure, will chip in as well. She's like a ringleader. I got too much here that I got to get to. I see that Olivier Pellier is retiring. I think after some rides today, won himself 4 different arcs and tons of things around the world. Breeders' Cup, obviously, right? Goldacova. Kentucky Downs, we'll talk about tomorrow with Hammer. If you didn't see their announcement yesterday, wow. they're renaming the Dueling Grounds Derby the Nashville Derby. Yeah, it's cool. I like the Dueling Grounds portion. I love, but so anyway, that's all right. tomorrow we've got Woodbine to kick off as well. Woodbine starts on Saturday. I've got to reach out to Ron Gierkink, and I think Tim Lawson's going to join us. Somebody from Woodbine will join us to kick off the season. I see Belterra. Yeah, I mentioned Thistledown, and I didn't mention the Belterra's kicked off as well. All right, so that's some of the top line stuff. The Zidane legal proceedings feels like that's done. The judge in the appeal court yesterday afternoon denying the emergency motion, so that will go away. I had a sniff of a chance. Tomorrow night at Keeneland, by the way, you've got the Horse of Racing Age sale too. Let me slip that in because that'll fall through the cracks. And then let me quickly get to the what I couldn't get to. I told you there's too many things from 2 days worth of shows in one fell swoop. First of all, on Tuesday, you had the Indianapolis, the Horseshoe pick fives, and they saw a predictable amount of action, and 280,000 basically in on the early one. The early pick five paid 372, and the late pick five paid close to 600. 527 actually. So they were very approachable. It turned out. I thought they were tricky, and they were pretty formful. There were a lot of favorites, but a couple of like second and third choices as well. So those of you that negotiated that, feels like a lot of people hit. Yesterday at Keeneland, we should mention, I'm going to save this tap it first. I'll talk about the Winchell Homebred out of Louisville first, the Girolamo mare. And Tappet beats a 1-4 Wesley Ward Breeze Easy product, Caribbean Wind. And then we've got to say a big thank you. I've got a new nickname for McPeak, you know. Did you see that yesterday on my tweet? With all the talk about the Bears, they better bring a bear. I got a grizzly. He's now Gentle Ken. yesterday, Kenny, he gave you Relampago Verde when we talked on Tuesday, 27-1, and I got a bunch of responses. A lot of people played, and wire to wire under Brian Hernandez Jr., the Walking L Thoroughbred, Bolt Doro Gelding breaks the maiden. In the fourth career start, third off having missed pretty much all of last year. So Relampago Verde, and Kenny gave you every hint that that this one, you know, getting on the grass out of the Irish mare, etc. So 55-74. Thank you, Gentle Ken. You have to be a certain age, I think, to have, right? You remember Gentle Ben? I mean, we had the absolute greatest trifecta of animal shows growing up, right? Lassie's the gold medal winner. Flipper is the silver medalist, and Gentle Ben, he's the bronze medalist. That was the trifecta of animal shows. For those of I'm 64, so for those of you, if you've got another entrant, let me know for the superfecta: Lassie, Flipper, Gentle Ben. Yeah, all right, there you go. What's that, Lassie? You say it's time to call Steve Asmussen, and Timmy fell down a well. I'll tell you, they don't pay me enough. that's a lot of entertainment. if you can't laugh at yourself. Oh, boy. All right. We're 0-1. oh, my God. Let me see. I'm having trouble with Steve here quickly. I didn't like that phone sound. So sometimes you get, you know, sometimes these phones rings and you say, uh-oh, you know, you're not getting them. We'll see. Steve Asmussen joins us. There we go. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
Sorry about yesterday. You know,
yeah, it threw me off all day. I didn't get to get it out. So
I figured that's why, because you know you're busy. You know, I get it. First of all, let's congratulate the entire team, starting with Ron Winchell and David Fisk and you and the staff and Scott and everybody. Gunrunner, a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, it's just absolutely beautiful. It really is. Everything that horse did for us, and just to be able to celebrate it appropriately with him being put in the Hall of Fame is going to be a great occasion.
And you know, it's fun when you know, when you get to look at like PPs of a horse like this, and you sort of relive mentally, you know, the career, and you know he was just good every step of the way, but he kept improving at the same time.
Absolutely, the maturity that he showed, and he was just such an obviously talented, but so unbelievably intelligent. I mean, he knew what it was for. I mean, how he would be to train between races and then the week of, he would just, he knew what it was for. He knew it was what was coming up. And what an unbelievable blessing to have those experiences and to be around him and to enjoy winning the races that he did.
You know, and what's notable, Steve, too, you look at the way he was campaigned, and he really, there was never, was there, is it fair to say there was never a significant hiccup?
You could have marked his charts 2 years in advance.
Amazing.
He was physically and mentally ready to do what you wanted him to do at all times. And Sheets guy, and I just and will keep forever his Sheets, as far as, like, as you mentioned, a horse that started out good, incrementally improved his entire life to reach what is no less than a Hall of Fame level.
Yeah, exactly. And yet I'm looking here at the, you know, you start with the 2-year-old season, breaks his maiden at first asking, which is always, you know, and always
a mile. Yeah, a mile first asking isn't for everybody. And he just an absolute a machine. He just and I remember him winning, obviously, the Breeders' Cup Classic and you know, that year, and it was obviously, you know, horse of the year, and then he went to Three Chimneys and shown before he went back in training for the Pegasus, and it was just amazing. He was remarkable how he handled that, and it was obviously proud of himself and the way that he showed, and how everybody remarked on how sound he was, and just couldn't be prouder than to be associated with him.
And I'm looking at the figs, 72 buyer in the debut, then 84, 82 in the allowance, and in the Kentucky Jockey Club, he gets a couple of, gets about 6 weeks, you know, to get ready for the 3-year-old year, wins the Risen Star, the Louisiana Derby, third in the Kentucky Derby, 89 buyer, 90, 96, 99 in the Matt Wynn. The Haskell got a sloppy track, which honestly, you know what? That's something, Steve. I guess really the only thing that held him back was a wet track.
Yeah, it was his Achilles heel. Ran with a little bit of a lower head placement. Covered a lot of ground with his stride, head well out in front of him, a touchdown, and he did not handle sloppy racetracks well. He did not excel on them, and I felt it had a little to do with his Dubai World Cup. I mean, we made it rain in the desert that night. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, but it's obviously he did not love a sloppy surface, but he more than redeemed himself from those couple.
Well, and you came, you know, I'm just looking at the numbers, and I really hadn't noticed this until now. You know, those 90s then with the Travers, and obviously Eric Gates' performance, you know, was a runoff, but a 102 there, a 104 in the Pennsylvania Derby, then a 111 in the Clark, 110 in the Razorback, and then after the World Cup, 110, 112, 115, 117, 120. His 5-race win streak that ended with the Pegasus and included the Breeders' Cup Classic, the Woodward, the Whitney, and the Stephen Foster. I mean, as great a championship campaign as you're going to see. And every race, Steve, he increased his fig. It's quite notable.
He was amazing.
Yeah.
Just truly an amazing horse. And or his win in the Pegasus, you know, it was just an absolute gallop. And then he goes to the breeding shed. And if anything, he's even more impressive as a sire.
Well, and that's, you know, that's a part of this. And of course goes in with Justify, who's also, you know, gone on from his racing career to, you know, to have a tremendous impact already as a stallion. But obviously Gunrunner's, you know, got a big head start. And now we're getting Gunrunner mares that are getting, you know, that are going to start. It's a tremendous legacy. And actually Ben Leone, I mentioned Bessie Lou, you know, bred him and, Ned Evans is involved because of Quiet Giant and one of his female families. So so many things went into this career for now. Obviously, Florent Giroux, who rode him, other than the first three starts of his career as a two-year-old, Ricardo Santana, but Florent very closely associated. Gunrunner adds to the count of Asmussen trainees that go into the Hall of Fame. Well done. Steve, let's shift gears and talk a little Derby and a little recent action. I kind of saved everything up. Let's talk about Skelly, by the way, from the weekend before last.
Well, obviously extremely proud of Skelly traveling to the Middle East, running valiantly in Saudi Arabia, and then to return and run 8-4 in the count fleet. You know, just what a blue collar, tough, you know, that kind of travel, the quarantine, and still lay down a race as good as he did in the count fleet.
Yeah, Steve, he's a gelding, so there's no, you know, there's no rush with him. You can cherry pick, and he's, you know, he's a 5-year old. You know, talk about what you envision for him.
Well, I think I want to keep him at 3/4 of a mile, and there is another opportunity to run him at Oaklawn in the Lake Hamilton on Derby Day. It's quite obvious his record at Oaklawn. His major targets this year will be the Vanderbilt at Saratoga, as well as the Breeders' Cup Sprint. And he will probably have two other races than that on the year, and we want to map that out accordingly. But as I said, I want to keep him at 3/4 of a mile.
Well, he's won back-to-back count fleets, and he could win another couple of count fleets yet. Tell me about Red Lane Thoroughbreds.
Well, Frank Alozzo purchased Skelly for Chris Hicks, and he was the first horse that I had for him, and obviously the right one. I have gotten a couple opportunities since, and they've got quite a bit to live up to. But he's, you know, just a wonderful horse that is a lot of happiness, and we expect him to continue to do so.
Very nice. Yeah, and he was, you know, he was $350,000 as a Florida sale 2-year old. So there were expectations, but he's absolutely fulfilled them, and now he's 9-14. Here's a horse that people can basically, you know, people say that we have too many horses that leave and you know, go on to be stallions and doesn't give us horses to cheer for. Here's a horse that people can you know, enjoy for.
He's put several. He's got quite the following, definitely at Oaklawn, and two count fleets in a row, as well as some other significant victories around that. And nice. If anything, his most recent race is his fastest ever.
Yep. He's the new Whitmore. Skelly, a practical joke. A couple of other recent performances that we can slip in. I know we should talk about Informed Patriot, right? Coming out of that bathhouse the other day.
Yeah, a very nice victory in the bathhouse over a mile and an eighth. And, you know, Ricardo gave him a very good trip. You know, it's always nice to have another good horse for Kirk and Judy Robeson. You know, they've done so much for us and been forever supporters. And he is a full brother to Spun to Run and has a bright future ahead of him.
How serious are you about either a Preakness thought or something.
Right. With the win in the with Bathhouse, it is a paid-in race to the Preakness. I'm happy with how Informed Patriot came out of his race, went back to the racetrack. But we will see how the Derby unfolds and what the Preakness looks like it'll be, and try to pick the right spot for him. But without, we are definitely considering it.
Very good. All right. And of course, there's also even the Sir Barton. If you know, if
I think the Sir Barton's are non-winners of a sweepstakes.
That's right.
But that may be the spot for the horse that was second, Imperial Go.
Oh, there you go. All right. That's right, because you ran 1-2 in that spot. Let me ask about Storm's Home, too, the maiden winner.
It's the big horse for Eric Asmussen with his victory at Oaklawn. He's a very attractive colt that we had for Mike McCarty. We had purchased him as a yearling, a couple little setbacks as a two-year-old, but always had very high hopes for him. And we had him down at Houston training there, where Eric was riding regularly and working him out in the mornings. And he said he's good enough to win at Oaklawn, and would you let me come ride him? You know, so I spoke with Mr. McCarty about that. He loved the idea, and Eric made it happen. And he was definitely right about him being good enough to win at Oaklawn.
Very cool. This is a run happy, and actually fetched quite a bit of money. So there's obviously some upside here going forward.
We definitely believe that he is. He'll expecting him to run back in another than and go from there. But he's got a nice talent level. Came out of that win really well. Has trained nicely since, and will be anxious to run him back. But do expect him to show up in an allowance race next.
I did see that you kicked off the season at Lone Star, winning that Blue Bonnet with closing act with Stuart Elliott, and we should also congratulate Stewie's son, Chris.
Chris, his first ride was a winning one. We're so fortunate to have Stuart riding regularly in Texas, at Houston, and now at Lone Star, and you've never met a more consistent, qualified he is very good for horse racing and definitely great for us. And it's how much Eric being able to work around him and learn around him, and how much he taught Keith, as well as he is continuing to teach Eric now, is it's very impressive.
Really nice. I got to ask about yesterday before we talk about Derby and Oaks. You're now getting Tappets to win first out at 4.5 furlongs.
Yeah, that was a very good victory. Poor me, all I get is Tappet and Gunrunner Homebreds for Winchell. Boy, that'll make you a pretty good trainer. But no, it was a filly that Dad liked coming out of Laredo. She's very mature. I don't think I've ever had a 2-year-old filly by Tappet act any better pre-race, post-parade, and be more professional in their first start than she was. Surprising how quick she is. Had two of her older brothers that both of them wanted to go around twice on the racetrack, and here she comes, and she's obviously very handy and plenty quick, but very proud of her victory yesterday and the ride that Keith put up on her to win it.
Nice. And I did see that that mare, who I remember Jimmy Toner had that mare, a New York bred for Magic Cap, and she's actually after I don't know if it was after this foal, but was sold in foal with carrying a Gunrunner, and I think went to Japan.
Yes, she did. Probably. Hopefully, that's a horse they'll be bringing back over for the Derby with their trans.
Well, there you go. Yep. And once again, a reminder that, according to some people, the rest of the world doesn't want our bloodstock. Oh, except except they do.
I love that. Everybody turned their nose up except for Japan. Now we can't beat them.
Exactly right. Let's talk about the terrific work by Track Phantom. And Steve, the pressure's off, right? I mean, I think people have written him off for whatever reason. And you come in with, you know, only the expectations that you and the team have for him.
He is a very accomplished horse that has faced this group continuously his whole career. And I think he competes really well against them. He's at home at Churchill, being stabled here the majority of last year, multiple races over the surface, which are good. And his Louisiana Derby was not his best race. And I think circumstances on the night, you know, just kind of lost concentration coming into the stretch, jumped to his right lead too soon. We've added blinkers on him, you know, and love how he's trained with him. His work on Sunday was as impressive as you would want one to be, and he handled extremely well, and he is doing great. Nothing but respect for the field that's assembled for this year's Derby, but we're very proud to have Track Phantom to run in it.
Steve, if you think back to our conversation after the LeCompte, you laid out the plan, and you said he was going to need every start along the way, the Risen Star, the Louisiana Derby, and that the only major goal was getting here for this race next Saturday. And, you know, you tinkered with the, you know, adding some blinkers. He certainly seemed to settle nicely in the work. I mean, there was a point where it was obvious that he wanted to go get that horse.
Right. And he handled very nicely. Going into the turn, he looked to accelerate just a tad, but he dropped a bit nicely, relaxed beside him, and was very, very comfortable through the wire with a nice strong gallop out. Very happy with how he came out of it and has looked on the racetrack since. He's a, you know, beautiful son of Quality Road that, you know, how could we be any more excited than we are about it?
What's your ideal scenario from a draw standpoint and a trip standpoint?
Well, get the major works out of the way, realize how important every day is and to get there. And then the way he jumps away from the gates, he's going to be able to be wherever he wants to.
Very good. Well, Track Phantom and we'll wait till Saturday and go from there. The situation with the filly, Steve, is getting a little precarious.
Yes, it is. And obviously nervous about things that are out of our hands. But she's a filly that we very much would like this chance with her, this opportunity, lightly raced, but has gotten considerably faster in her three starts. And We're hoping to get in the field.
And I had Joelle and Ron Anderson on Tuesday after the announcement, and we talked. They're really excited about her. So, out of curiosity, I mean, if she can't run next Friday, is there? And you can't. Well, I guess what's on Saturday? Can you enter something else?
I think the Black Eyed Susan would be next.
All right.
You know, how she would run in the eight bells at 7/8. At this stage, I think she deserves to stay at two turns. All right. We're obviously focused on the Kentucky Oaks and the opportunity to run there, and very much so want to start there. We're aware of the circumstances, but the Black Eyed Susan would be more likely for her than the eight bells.
Very good. And that gives me the chance to kind of segue. I mentioned Joelle and the Hall of Fame, and I when I texted you the other day about a visit, you know, you've got a hand in Joelle getting in the hall too. You certainly have got to be, in addition to everything else that's going to go on here this next week leading up to Oaks and Derby, talk about Keith riding Friday and Saturday for Wayne.
Yeah, that's it's unbelievably special. For me, it's absolutely crazy because I grew up in a house that had pictures on the wall of Dwayne Lucas Trainer and Keith Asmussen Jockey, but it was my father. So, you know, to see the success that they've had together this spring and for them to work together so closely, it's amazing, you know, considering that Wayne, my dad was riding for Wayne when I was a little kid growing up. So it's, you know, Wayne is horse racing. There's not another one. And for him to still be going this strong and doing as well as he is at 88 is inspirational. And Keith, growing up at the level we've been fortunate to compete at, this is expected of him, and he's prepared for it. And for it's just a I can't tell you how much I enjoy listening to them talk about what they're going to get done.
Well, and yeah. just getting, you know, getting here with Lemon Muffin and Just Steel, it's an amazing, it's something that you could see it sort of developing as the winter was going on, and everybody, right?
It was Keith had worked Just Steel a couple of times before, earlier, and then leading up to the Arkansas Derby, worked him again. He had the option of riding a horse of mine, and he told me that what Jess Steele was going to do and how well he was doing, and he chose correctly. And that's part of the process. Like I mentioned earlier, being a sheets guy, watching Jess Steele jump forward, run a 7 in the Arkansas Derby for him. He's never been faster, and what a great time to be fast when it matters most.
Wow. To have a rooting interest in these races that, you know, beyond your own horses, and it's quite something.
Yeah, well, to be here at Churchill during this time, it's for me, it's just so special to be able to compete in horse racing at this level. And I'm reliving watching the derbies before I was able to participate in them. And I do, it's the first derby I witnessed live was when Winning Colors won for Wayne. And what a special, you know, feeling the connection just from how long our families have known each other, and to witness that and then to still be involved in it now, it's unbelievably special.
Now, keep everybody healthy and happy here. Get these horses, next Friday and Saturday, and not just these, but every other. And that includes, Steve, any number of opportunities the next several days at Oaklawn, Lone Star, and Keeneland, and then Churchill. It's time for everybody's favorite segment, the Steve Asmussen Lock of the Week.
You mentioned Oaklawn. We've had a great meet there. We got 6 racing days left. Got plenty of action this week. But I got to go with Valentine Candy and The Bachelor. 3 stakes wins at Oaklawn. Just a wonderfully talented son of Justify for the Heidelbros and his partnership group, Jackpot. And he's just a very nice horse, and happy to have him back in on dirt and expect him to win on Saturday.
Very nice Saturday, the 8th, the Bachelor Stakes, the sprint for the 3-year-olds. I see you got Cats by 5 in there too.
Yes, I do. A horse that's picked it up, run some solid numbers the last couple of races, and he will have to step it up to beat Candy, but he will compete well.
I see Zeitlos in the Roxalana on Saturday, and then next week you start 5-0 Tuesday, gets the week kicked off, Aspenite in the William Walker.
Yes, I do. Added blinkers on him. Would have rather not been 12 of 12 going, you know, sprinting on the turf, but he is a durable horse that handled Kentucky Downs well, so the 12-0 shouldn't bother him at all.
Steve Asmussen, everybody. And Steve was looking forward to this on all these topics, Gunrunner and Keith and your Derby Oaks horses, and a lot of things to be excited about as we transition from Keeneland to Churchill on Saturday. Best of luck. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Steve Asmussen, everybody, and the family enjoying a unique experience as Keith rides in the Oaks and the Derby for Wayne. And that it is pretty touching, actually, the scenario that, you know, Keith's grandfather rode for Wayne. Amazing, actually. We've got a choice here. I've got Sid and Dick Powell for this next 35 minutes. So let's let's see. Let me go to Sid, because I hope that's all right. I guess I have to ask the two of them if which one can. I don't want to put anybody in a timing jackpot on this morning. Here, let me just ask Dick if he can wait about 20 minutes or so. I knew today was, I knew we were in trouble today, because there was just, you know, all the stuff from Wednesday, and we had to try to get it in. I do see that there's been an outstanding reaction to the animal shows. here's King. King Hackley is he's throwing up Trigger, but was the Trigger was just part of. That was part of the Roy Rogers show, right? The Trigger didn't have his own. He didn't have his own show. And I see my friend Flicka. Okay, all right. And I'm seeing who else. I see that Rin Tin Tin. That's fair. Rin Tin Tin. Yeah. Rin Tin Tin responsible for the. I think he was right. Wasn't he responsible for the explosion of German Shepherds as a American pet, right? And then Lassie with the collies. How old were you when you finally got informed that there were like six Lassies? Right? That it wasn't the same Lassie all that whole time. Yeah, no, I fell for it. I thought it was the same one. John Panetta weighing in with Mr. Ed. That's outstanding. Great job, Mr. Ed. Mr. Ed is in the chat. All right, I think this is going to have to result in a poll, right? We're going to have a, you know, kind of like a NCAA's, right? And pare it down. All right. I'm up for that. anything to take a break from the constant, the Derby conversation. You can't, start crossing your eyes after a while. You keep looking at these. You're looking at these numbers. I'm backing off until the draw. Actually, I don't need to. You know, don't need to look at the PPs. You know, another 10 times. I'm going to ask Sid. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve.
I don't know if you heard the early missive, but amongst the shows when we were growing up. And you're the same age as me. Favorite animal TV show?
Well, mine was Marlon Perkins. Mutual of Omaha.
Okay.
Wild Kingdom.
Okay. That's like a catch all. That's almost a catch all animal thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, there was also that one Daktari, wasn't there?
Daktari, look at you, Daktari. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah. Very, yeah, Daktari. That was That was a lion. There was a lion there.
Yeah, yeah.
Daktari. Well, because this is out of control. Because we've got I forget how I even got started on this topic, but.
Timex, of course, sponsored Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom because the slogan was, "It takes a licking and keeps on ticking."
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. Oh my God, that's funny. People. I seem to have caught a wave with this. Sid, we're getting close, obviously, and you know, we'll get final thoughts from you on Derby next week. But in the meantime, you and Francis seem you got your finger closely on the pulse of what's going on at Keeneland.
Yeah, and Francis really likes she's just looking at the horses she's seen in Keeneland, but she's been watching Sierra Leone, of course, that she's been very high on, even prior to the Bluegrass. I mean, not that it's any surprise. And also, just a touch, she seems to feel he's really a nice horse, maybe just the inexperience, but, there's a lot of things that could happen in this time frame, you know. You've got Justified with horses in the Yokes and the Kentucky Derby, and a heavy favorite for the Guineas, which is the same weekend in City of Troy. So, I mean, it could, you know, one scenario is it could be a massive weekend for Justified if everything hits.
Well, and also he got his first Group 1 winner in Japan too.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's Australia. He's just been lighting it up with this. You know, he started off with really well with his 2-year-olds, even though he was unraced at 2, and he just continues to keep getting, you know, his top horses. He's really on a really torrid streak.
I'm glad actually this came up because I did save a piece that I noted from the press release from Ashford. They came with the report of Mare's Bread, Sid, that we talked about, 2 months ago now, give or take. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of criticism aimed at Coolmore on the breeding side for what people perceived as overbooking of Justify, and yesterday they announced that he will not shuttle on Southern Hemisphere time. What was your read on that? I mean, was that in response to critique or as he matures?
No, I think that he's gotten to be he already was supremely valuable, but he was covering mares at $300,000. So I mean, it becomes extremely. Usually you don't get a horse that's standing for that kind of money shuttling. Once they reach a certain level, they're just not going to shuttle. You've never had, a storm, you just don't have, horses in that kind of stud fee range shuttling. You kind of establish them, the stud fee goes up, and now he's making, he's so valuable that he can't go over there. But that announcement was that he would serve Southern Hemisphere mares here.
Right. They would have to, people have to send their mare to him.
Yeah, that's right. And, a lot of the top stallions do that, Into Mischief, Frankel in Europe, you know, those are, of course, other horses that are way too valuable to ever even consider shuffling.
Well, and of course, this conversation, you know, comes, you know, within 48 hours of his making the Hall of Fame. We just talked to Steve Asmussen about Gunrunner, and it is interesting. You have, you know, you have this pair of Hall of Fame inductees that, you know, have gone on. I'm not going to say that their exploits in the breeding shed are eclipsing their race careers, but they're certainly on a par.
Yeah, and it's always, you know, just because you're a top horse on the track doesn't mean you're going to become a great sire. In both of their cases, they have become excellent stallions.
Very much. And boy, I'm just looking at this press release. The numbers, he's got 139 winners from his 290 starters and 28 stakes winners. And, you know, you always keep very close tabs on, you know, percentages, you know, the number of runners from, you know, the foal count, then the number of winners from the runners, and then the number of stakes. And it's impressive, let's say the least. And you know, they're still maturing, right? I mean, you have no idea what's in the pipeline that we haven't even really seen yet.
That's right. And you know, a horse at that stud fee, even when he went to stud and the attraction to him, you know, they don't have those. It's not as pronounced once you get to their third and fourth crops running in terms of quality, because they continue to get really good mares. You know, we've talked about that drop from the stallion's first crop, second to the third to the fourth, you know. But a horse like him, since he was bred to excellent mares throughout his first four seasons, that's what keeps him propped up there and in the news. Of course, his own contributions as well, but I'm talking about from the mayor's side.
Well, and you know, it's early, at least domestically, but you know, being, you know, given Scat Daddy and you know the turf prowess side of things, there's some of these young runners of his that are gonna, you know, at some point move over to grass
and already they have.
Yeah.
That's the thing with him.
Exactly.
You know, and for example, in Europe, City of Troy is going to be going to 2000 guineas. You know, Australia, I don't know what the Japanese, well, Phil, you were mentioning Utaham,
yeah.
Yeah, she didn't win a group one, did she?
No, just a stake. I guess it was just a stake.
Yeah, correct.
I called it a group one, but it's first stake winner in Japan for him.
Yeah. I mean, Australia, Japan, Europe, you know, North America. I mean, he's all surfaces, distances. And the one in Japan actually was on dirt, interestingly.
Well, speaking of which, I do want to ask you about the tomorrow night's New York Times Presents investigation. We'll get your feedback, but on the Japanese topic, Sid, how do you suggest people, you know, that are trying to, you know, we don't even have TO password to look at yet and watch on the racetrack. That you know, that's coming, but we do have the big star, the undefeated Forever Young, and he had that work yesterday, which sometimes you can't entirely draw all the conclusions you might from domestic training methods, because they do things they do things a little differently. What's your, from a pedigree standpoint, we're back to this situation where, you know, we got these international campaigners from Japan, and I mean, at some point you expect one to break through, but is it a wait and watch until it happens? What's your view of this horse?
Well, a couple of things. First off, he's certainly a well-bred horse, and he sold for the equivalent of like $720,000 as a yearling. The other really important factor with him is he was bred by Northern Farm, which is Katsumi Yoshida, and I put a tweet out the other day just to show the significance of this. From over the last 12 months, there have been 18 individual Japanese Group 1 winners, and Katsumi Yoshida bred 12 of them, or two-thirds of them, 67%. This horse was bred by Katsumi Yoshida. He certainly got that going for him. He's undefeated, obviously. That workout you referenced, to put it into perspective, Mike Welch or somebody, I think, pointed out the splits. It really was just open galloping, and then the last order he went in 23 and change.
Exactly.
So, that puts a whole different spin on it. It's not like he was plugging along, being asked for everything and had a slow workout. It was actually a design workout to finish up, which is how he tends to run.
Yep. Yep.
Closing. And so it seems like, it certainly has gone abroad and won. That route to the Derby so far has not been successful, but, horses have been getting closer out of it. And this year is probably the best year to try to take it, I think. Obviously, Fierceness was pretty awesome in his last race, but with the way Fierceness runs, he could be vulnerable. Plus, he's got this pattern of good, bad races, too. So I don't think he's, a dominant, sure thing type of horse. And it appears that, you got a lot of horses this year that are going to try to finish from way back. Sierra Leone, Catching Freedom, perhaps this horse.
Yep.
And it's going to make for a very interesting development in the race itself, I think. Go ahead.
No, I just was going to add, I was going to fold in because Honor Marie worked today and I hadn't talked about it yet.
That was an eye-opening work that you put out there. Very eye-opening.
You know what's funny? When he went by, first of all, you didn't think he was necessarily going as fast as he ended up going,
right.
Which is typically a good sign. But the thing that, to me, he went 59-1. And what was stunning about the work, I mean, and he's a horse that just with his natural gait, he is going to be in the, and I talked to Whit Beckman on Tuesday, he's going to be in the, maybe in the front portion of the back third, meaning, the last six or seven horses, ideally, I think they're anticipating being maybe 13th or 14th, early in the race. This work displays something that I love. I've already pretty much committed. I've been talking about him for weeks, but he went in a shocking 12 flat opening quarter, 11-4, 11-4, 11-4, 11-4.
Yeah.
Now, If for those that, you know, the average winning time in a Derby is about 2:02.
Yeah.
Historically, if you use that as a model, you run quarters. You run five quarters at the same speed, 24-1, 24-1, 24-1. Horses that run like this win their share of Derbies.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to use them too.
I mean, that is just, I mean, you know, and he could certainly get in traffic trouble and, you know, whatever. But the horses that have this type of metronomic pattern, that's a very, very good way to go into this race.
It is. Another thing that I like about it is that his sire was sent to Japan, and usually when the sire goes out, they get their first big horse. I mean, real big horse.
That's right? That's hard. Yeah. It's Daredevil 2.0. Bring them back. We'll take charge.
Yeah.
Or take
and
charge.
I think there's going to be some pace in here.
Yeah.
You know, Dornock is going to definitely not run the way he did before.
Nope.
He's going to, you know, in the bluegrass, he's going to, I believe he's going to, you know, have a say in the pace. That's how he's really been pretty good. You know, you got fierceness, you've got others, lesser horses. And just the way the Derby is, you know, invariably, you know, who knows, maybe this other Japanese horse will go to right to the front and set a massive pace like they did before. You don't know that this other Japanese horse, T.O. Password, he's only coming in off two starts, I believe.
That's correct. Yeah. And he did lead in the last, in that stake that he came out coming out of. He did go to the lead, but it didn't. It certainly doesn't look like he's got breakaway speed. You know, he's up front in that race, but it sure doesn't look like he's got the kind of speed, to be right up front with fierceness and Dornick and Just a Touch and Track Phantom.
Yeah.
I mean, that feels
right.
Like, you know, those four
are definitely gonna, yeah, but yeah. You just never know with these Japanese horses.
That's true. So you could put
I mean, that's what happened last time. You know, remember when those, you know, it's certainly, you know, it's such great race. It's an interesting race, and it's become such a focal point for the industry. Obviously, it's the Super Bowl, quote unquote, if you want to call it that. A lot of these horses after this race will find their other, you know, their levels and distances, but everybody wants to take a shot at this right now. So there's always this unknown factor. Somebody's going to do something not in the script.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And you mentioned as a focal point for the industry, what a perfect segue, Sid, and obviously we'll get your final thoughts next week on Derby.
Yeah.
But Bill Finley got a chance to to watch the New York Times FX Network documentary, whatever. It debuts tomorrow night on the FX Network at 10 o'clock. The New York Times presents Broken Horses. And I'm guessing you saw Bill's piece, Bill Finley's?
I didn't read it yet. I saw that he had done a piece. It's just so, you know, predictable that this kind of stuff happens right on the eve of the Derby. I mean, you know, obviously, the New York Times has had a series of columns, articles, features through the years on this thing. You know, I mean, sometimes I wish they would go just as hard on dogs in shelters, humane society that get euthanized every day because nobody. People have turned them in because they can't handle them or there are no homes for them, you know. It's just, you know, I'm not judging their journalistic intents here. Obviously, there's a story to be told, but it's predictable. It's every year, and they use their story. It's almost like it's not in August, right? It's not in whatever. It's not in September. It's not in December. It's right on the eve of the Derby. They're using the interest of the race to bring this up for general consumption. And there's if you've done it once or twice, it's just become a predictable release from the New York Times, whether it's an article or now in this film, the New York Times, that there has to be something that's hugely negative that piggybacks on the popularity of the race. There's always some, there's a question of, why do they keep doing this every year? At this time. And obviously it's to gain traction.
No doubt. And it would be, one thing, Sid, to my way of thinking, if you wanted to, you wanted to focus on an incident, or a circumstance that, I think back to the Triple Crown try of I'll Have Another, where Joe brought out the vet records and the treatments and so forth. Okay, that's news reporting. I don't think all of us can accept and deal with straightforward, you want to call it controversy, and even if it's something that is damaging to the industry's reputation or individuals. What this appears to be, and Bill couldn't make it this morning. He's going to be with me tomorrow at 9:15. Looking at it through Bill's prism, this is just a rehash of the same criticisms, and basically repackaging the same incidents, and at the same time, there appears to be no reporting on the aftermath of any of the incidents involved, and all the improvements that the industry has made, and that is what makes this dishonest, and it basically is the same template that we're seeing in a lot of other areas of dishonest reporting, that is taking a distorted view of whatever side of a discussion they want to exploit, and it's tiresome, it's completely unfair. And I just got word, actually, Lisa Lazarus is going to have to push back till tomorrow herself, actually. So Tom Rooney will be with us at 11. And NTRA and Tom, Tom has spearheaded this initiative, essentially an educational advertising and public relations initiative, and it comes at a great time to offset this kind of thing. But, I mean, we've got so many success stories on any topic you want to criticize the game. We've had absolute direct responses to anything that could be characterized as a stain or a problem, and I'm amazed that I guess we're thought of as low hanging fruit. I don't have a better explanation or understanding of you know what the eagerness is.
Chris Rossi, who's O'Crunk on Twitter, you know, he kind of connected some dots, which is very true, and that is, you know, when Jockey Club wanted to get the PISA legislation passed, you know, for years, you know, there was a tendency on their part to kind of blow up the game, napalm everything, right?
Right.
Scorched earth theory. And Chris pointed out that, you know, what they did then to try to get the notice of lawmakers is, you know, they kind of fed the New York Times everything that was bad, da 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 da. And now they're in the position of trying to give money to entities that kind of show the good of racism now. So, in essence, there's all this money that's been going around, media spends, that created or intensified a lot of what the spin is. And there's also monies now from same entities trying to correct that. And so it's this money is going in a circular fashion. And, you know, we, say, as an industry or, say, the TJC started this, and now they're trying to fund ABR, all this stuff to make racing look great. But it's something that they kind of helped to further along. So there's some great irony that a lot of the burning of the game, they lit the match, and now they're trying to put it out as well. And so they're funding everything to do that. But there's some deep irony in that as well.
No, it's like it's like those horror films. The call is coming from inside the house.
That's exactly. The guy is in the house. Everybody's trapped in the house. They're wondering where the guy is in the house.
Oh, my God.
And then the way all this stuff works, you know, there's campaigns on social media by certain people and certain entities as well to try to go after people. There's a power struggle to control the message within the industry itself. And in a lot of ways, you know, the Jockey Club is realize that they need to control the message, and you know, I mean, they're a partner in one of the biggest trade industries, the journals, the Blood Horse, for example. You know, so yeah. it's a situation where really no forethought. Foresight into what was going to end up happening once they started to go after the game itself. And what we have now, not to say that there aren't any problems, obviously a lot of these are legitimate issues, you know, the breakdowns, track configurations, the surfaces, whatnot, but the idea of one of these major stakeholders in the game creating the conflict that they're now trying to extinguish is symptomatic of the problems of leadership of this game. You know, there was never any clear thought of always trying to be transparent, address issues upfront, defend upfront when needed, and stand by the game. In other words, the entire strategy has always been suspect.
Yep. No, that's perfectly, that really well stated, Sid.
Yeah. And everybody knows it, too.
Yeah. You know? Well, and
certainly, you know, within the game, people are understanding. And it, yeah, it's evident everywhere.
Well, you know, this thing is going to go on tomorrow, and then it'll be on available apparently on Hulu. We'll talk to Bill Finley about it tomorrow. And you know, Bill's not afraid to criticize the game. So you know, for Bill to pretty much pan this and you know, characterize it as a you know, as just a rehash, tells you all you need to know. So I'm looking forward. Haven't had Bill on in ages, so I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah.
All right, Sid, you got to put on the handicapping hat for next week, and next Wednesday we will get your Derby and Oak selections, and invariably there's a 20 or 30 to 1 shot that makes their way into the number. So we'll look forward to it.
All right, Steve, it was great talking. I'll speak to you next week.
Sid Fernando, everybody, Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale, and of course, Work Thoroughbred Consultants. They're still, it's April 25th. They're going to keep covering mares for another, you know, another several weeks. So don't hesitate. Get a hold of Sid and Roger and Francis and some late season. There's late season deals. There are late season deals to be had. So Sid will help you. And by the way, speaking of late foals, I got a lot of. This is a very responsive morning, I'll tell you that. I've got like 8 emails about the animal shows, and another half dozen tweets. This is hysterical. This is great. I'm laughing. I love it. I'll go through all of them, and we're gonna have to have a contest. The Honor Marie conversation about the work, and I'm glad I knew I would get it in this morning and talk about it. One of the comments under my laying out of the splits, which really, you know, that is what I liked most about the work, were the absolute perfect eights that Ben Curtis delivered. But let me see. I'll tell you who it was. Deidre Duke. Thanks to Deidre. She reminds that, speaking of late season covers, she reminds us that Honor Marie is a late foal. And as I told Witt back when we talked to him, must have been around the Risen Star. Not only is he a May foal, Derby Day is his birthday. He will turn 3 on Derby Day. The headlines write themselves. he's my kind of Derby horse. I think you've been listening to me about Derby for long enough to know that I want somebody that, you know, is a fun horse to key at a price. You know, two fills, Shackleford, Those are, you know, those are my Derby type horses. I want, you know, that's the direction I always gravitate. We're going to gravitate toward Dick Powell and Joe Clancy. Back to Churchill after this.
XM Radio.
Horseman, nominate now for Penn.